he's going to be like Jenny going to college, and it's going to be like Jim, you know, wishing that his kids were around more. Jim, I'll never forget, Jim probably doesn't even remember saying this to me, but Jenny does a lot of shows. They go to sheep shows all over the place. They go out of state. They go in state. They show all the time, and I don't even remember the context of it, but Jim said, you know, I'll go to any show that Jenny wants to go to because I don't know how long she'll want to hang out with old dad. And so, boy, that's sad. Why are we talking about that? So it took me that long to get to the point where I realize now, like, you know, my kids like me now and want to hang out with me now. So we again inherited a boat this year, and we have just been, Rosie doggy. We have been intentional about using it. We've been intentional about doing things as a family. You don't have to have a boat. That's just something we enjoy. You know, Jenny enjoys walking sheep around a pen. My kids would get tired of that real quick. But maybe not Hannah. Caleb would. and I would get tired of shearing them. Hannah would have to learn how to shear real fast. But whatever it is, you know, if you're starting a family farm, it's important to realize that you're starting a family farm. And a family farm's only a great place to raise the family if you guys are acting like a family and building that family and growing that family. And so so that's been a big game changer for us this year. And so that's why, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about today, you know, beyond just the infrastructure and how and why we do things on our farm, is like, you know, getting to the point where we're making changes to make our farm more sustainable, not just there are times when in the hierarchy of sustainability, to me, ecological is at the bottom. It's got to be sustainable to me emotionally and spiritually and physically and financially before it can be sustainable ecologically. And that isn't because I don't care about the way we farm. It's because if it's not all those other things, it doesn't matter. Because I'm not sustainable, then my family's not sustainable, and that's more important to me than anything else. If I can't have a farm that's sustainable financially and spiritually and emotionally and relationally and physically, I can always go get a job in town. I've already got one. I can always go get a house in town and, you know, let the Petersons farm this and just move on with it. So we've made a lot of focus this year to do that. Some of that is changing our focus to having more pigs, having less cattle. It's not because we don't like the cattle. It's not because cattle aren't profitable. It's because we have a finite number of cattle that we can have on the farm. We have a finite number of pigs that we can have on the farm, but that number's a lot higher of the number of pigs. And so so we can be more profitable as a whole with the pigs. We've worked really hard on having more whole and half hog sales to go along with our individual cut sales because they take less time. We've worked harder. We have a good rotation now with the kids. Caleb and Jonathan go to me on 1 week a month up to the CSA delivery, and Isaac and Hannah go on the other week of the month, and so we can take the kids with us. That's one of the reasons that we don't do the downtown market anymore, is because it's not conducive to taking kids. I can take my kids to the cheese shop and not worry about anything. I'm a little bit more worried taking a 5-year-old to the downtown Des Moines Farmers Market with 30,000 of my best friends wandering around that I don't know. And my kids love it. They've built great relationships with Thomas and Jordan at Grade A. A couple weeks ago, you know, Isaac and Hannah went to work for Thomas and Jordan, cleaning garlic necks, 100 garlic. They cleaned them all so that they could get ready for Jordan to braid them. And so it's been a good thing for our family. We haven't made it yet. We're not there yet, but we're making steps in the right direction. And I just wanted to throw that out there. Like I said, I have the podcast and the YouTube channel. That's what I spend a lot of time talking about. When it comes to being a farmer, I'm not a very good farmer. I've only been a farmer for 8 years. How good do I expect to be? I can read a lot of books, and that's great, but that doesn't, you know, I could have read 100 times on how to load a pig, and then when I went to do it, found out that it's not the same as it is in a book. Or I could have read 100 times about how to work cattle, but it's not the same when I can go over to the Petersons and you know, you can work 50 or 60 or more at a time, or, you know, or deal with, you know, I don't know, like more than 10 sheep that they have over there, whatever it is. So all those things will come in time, and like I said, we're gaining on some things. We're intentionally not doing as well at some things, but so that we can do better at other things and make progress all the way around. But that's the plan. I just want to throw that out there. That's free. Let's walk back. Let's finish our tour. We're getting down to it. It's 1 o'clock. We're supposed to be done at 2. So if you have questions, if anything that I'm missing, I've talked a lot about one of the things that we said we would talk about is social media. I talked a lot about the podcast and YouTube and stuff like that. We do a lot of stuff with that. But we still do a lot of stuff with Facebook, a little bit of stuff with Twitter, hardly anything with Instagram. I think for you, it's whatever you find most comfortable for you to do. And for me, it's Facebook. It's the easiest for me to do. I think I know a lot of people that have a lot of success with Instagram. The reason I don't like Instagram is because you can't put links in the posts. So, like, it's really great. You can put pictures in. You can't put, like, a link to anything. Like if I was going to, you know, say, hey, we're going to be at the pop-up farmer's market at the cheese shop, go to this link to see what's available. I can't do that on Instagram, or I can on Facebook or Twitter. Now, I will say one thing about Facebook is pictures will get you. So Facebook wants you to pay to use to have people use their stuff. I get that. It's a business. So they want you to pay. And so if you have a business page or something like that, like we have a farm page, it'll pop up. You want to boost that post for $5 or something like that. We never do that. Facebook is trying to get into video now. Facebook wants you to put video on their website instead of on YouTube. So Facebook prioritizes. Facebook will show your video to more people than they will your pictures or your posts without any text. So if I really want somebody to see something, like when we advertised for this, or if I've got a podcast episode or a YouTube video out, I'll make a video and I'll post it directly to Facebook. And instead of having 200 or 300 views, it'll have 1,500 or 1,600 or 1,700 views. And so that's a big thing. We've been blogging from before we started. I don't remember about the fence. It's off. We've been blogging since we've started. Small-scale farming is all about telling the story, right? Like 50% of what I do is market. You know, 50% of what I do is chores. The other 50% is marketing, whether it's actually selling, whether it's sending emails, whether it's driving to a locker, all of that stuff is marketing.
Well, and
before I forget, this little dung calf between the black cow and the dung cow, I just got this morning. Yeah. Cow number 6. Just had a little heifer calf. So these are our Dexters. We rotate them. They are Irish. They're a heritage breed. They are technically a tri-purpose breed. That's what they were used for in Ireland. They were a milk, they were a draft, and they were a meat animal. We rotationally graze them. This is not where they would be right now. This grass is far gone. They shouldn't be on it, but it was a good place to show for a tour, so I brought them back up here today. I like to make things easy. So this shows our herd. We've got a shade wagon over there. We've got water here. We've got cows that moo, heifers that moo. They are roughly between 600 and 850 pounds live weight in our herd. I love them as far as mothers. This year is the first year in 8 years that we have had a calf had to be pulled. We lost that calf this year. The vet said that cow's just not built for having kids, a heifer. She said that cow's never going to have a calf. So we dried her up and we took her and had to give her for the CSA. But
Other than that, we have not pulled a single calf. I have very rarely been around when a cow has calved. If I am, it's by accident. They do a pretty good job. I love the horns. It is great. It's beautiful. Not such a big fan of them when it comes to loading them. I just have a small trailer in the hoop house. It's just a 12-foot trailer, no divider. If I have to take a lot of animals somewhere, I'll borrow Peterson's. I'll borrow Justin's trailer. He's got dividers in it. And there have been times when, like, I've had to go in and shut a divider, and it's not so much that they're like, they're being physical against me with their horns. It's just like if there's a fly and they swing their head and they've got projectiles attached to it, and so yeah, it's just collateral damage, just shrapnel. And so I could just be in the wrong place. That being said, I've never had a single predator problem. We do have Great Pyrenees that wander around, but with the cattle, we've never lost a calf or anything. We don't have a ton of predators around here, you know. Even in the neighborhood, we've seen some bobcats, and obviously we have some coyotes, but we don't have a ton of predator pressure. We lay them up at the barn now anyway, so I can't tell you, but we don't have any predator pressure on the sheep as well, and they flock really well. And the cattle herd really well. They're real protective. I picked up that calf, and I'm carrying it up the hill today, and when it started bawling, every single animal in the herd was over around me, like, what are you doing? So they do well. They do well together. We just have too many. And as much as I would like grass-fed beef to be the centerpiece of our farm, it's profitable, easy to sell, people like it. We don't have it very often, and so when somebody asks for it and I don't have it, I usually tell them to go somewhere else. A lot of times I tell them to go to Ebersole's because they're just good friends of ours, and we, you know, sometimes they do, and sometimes they say, we just really like the way yours tastes better. It's not that we can't sell beef. It's not that we can't market it. We could market a lot more than we do. It's just that we can't raise it. With these on our farm, so what we're going to shoot for is about 5 cows. And with 5 cows, 4 to 5 cows, I figure we'll have about 15 head on the farm at any one time. It takes us 2 years to finish them, so we'll usually have a steer, older steer, and a younger animal on the ground still. And so that's kind of my goal, is to never have more than 15. And part of it is our pastures still have a lot of healing to do. They're not where we want them to be yet. As our pastures improved and as our soil improved, maybe the carrying capacity would go up a little bit, but I still want to raise more pigs. I like pigs. No, they laugh at my steak size. I mean, like, my steaks are like this. And so they're like, what's that? Steak. So yes and no. I mean, yeah, I know that part of the thing, like, if you go to the American Dexter Cattle Association, one of the benefits that they'll tell you is that you get all the prime cuts. Like, if you get all, you know, a lot of families won't buy a whole beef. That's a lot of meat. And so they'll get a quarter or half, and then you won't get as many prime cuts. And so the argument is you get all the prime cuts. We're a lot smaller. The customers, it takes them a couple times to get used to the size of the cuts, and then they're okay with it. But, I mean, a smaller, you know, there's plenty of PFI grass-fed guys that'll tell you a smaller framed animal is better on grass anyways, like a 0 or a 1 score frame size. I know Mike DeCook lives in the neighborhood, and he doesn't have cattle anymore, or at least not as many as he used to have. I think his ruminants now are pretty big frame size, the bison. But he had a smaller frame size, and I know it's been quite a few years ago when they had Gerald Fry down to do a field day there. He talked a lot about frame size. Dexters are probably smaller on the frame size. I've second guessed myself many times on the Dexters, because the cutout's not as good as you know, even a, like a low line Angus, it would be. size-wise, because they are a tripurpose. Yeah, I mean, you can look at it. You can see their hip bones, and it's not because they're... It's just because they're a dairy breed. They look more like a dairy breed. I know when Dexter cattle people have shows, they hire a dairy judge because they can judge them better than the beef guys judge them. And so there is. I have had second thoughts. As a homestead, if I had 5 acres, it's absolutely what I would have. Or if I was only going to have 10 or 15, like I'm going to, it's absolutely what I was going to have. If I was going to make it part of my business, a larger centerpiece of my business, I would have to rethink it a little bit, or market it differently. You know, one great market that I thought about is, you know, what if you sold ready to freshen heifers that are tame and ready to milk? Like that would be a homesteader's dream. You could sell those all day long in Iowa. Yeah, exactly. See right there. You could sell those all day long. And so that would be, if you were doing it on a small scale with textures, that would be a market that I would look at. It's going to take time, but... go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. The question is about biosecurity. And so, like, we didn't go tromping through the pigs today. I have in the past let people go through. It was a bigger crowd today. It was basically the reason I didn't really want to go through as far as biosecurity goes. I know Joel Salatin, he'll just walk people through his place. When PEDV was going around in force, you know, at that time I was thinking about raising some hogs for Nyman Ranch, and so I went to some of the Nyman Ranch meetings, and after I listened to the vets and things like that, basically I decided there's nothing I can do. Like, the vets are saying they're finding it on floors and cases. So what are you supposed to do about that? As far as then bringing in feeder pigs and curs would probably be something that I worry about. There are some Hereford guys that I know that have had PRRS go through their herds before. I always quarantine my animals before I bring them out with the rest of the herd. So, like, if I go pick up a trailer load of feeder pigs, they're not going to go straight out to the woods. A, they need to get trained electric, but B, I'm going to quarantine them for 3 to 4 weeks and just kind of keep an eye on them, make sure that they're doing well. The other thing is, though, I pretty much buy all my pigs from the same places. So I've built relationships with them, and I know what their system is, I know what they're doing, things like that. I probably should be more concerned about biosecurity than I am. I know some farmers wish I was more concerned about biosecurity than I am, or think I should be, I don't know. I had somebody ask me the other day what I think of, what is that, the waters of the U.S., how I think that's going to affect small farmers like me, and my response is, yeah, maybe. I have no idea. I have so much in my life that I have to stay on top of that, like, I can't be an advocate or something about everything, and so sometimes there's hard lessons in that, but we've been good with the pigs, quarantining them, and trying, you know, like, if we have a small field day where we've had some small events where we've had people pay to come down and get more in-depth, we'll go into the pig lots and talk about it. But then, and there's farms, you know, when I go buy pigs from Phil Kramer up in northern Iowa, you know, I'm putting on plastic booties and you know, when we're swapping, I get gilts from him sometimes, when we're swapping gilts in the parking lot, you know, we're making sure. But part of that's because, you know, the farm, type of farm that he has, and his dad's farm, and the fact that he's going and visiting farms all the time. He works for Nyman, and his dad sells them all. And they're way better pig farms than I am. So they're just smarter than me, is part of it as well. But it's really a bad answer to a really good question, honestly. But, That's what we have. I mean, erosion has been a massive problem on this farm much, much, much longer before we purchased it. You know, this... there just is. Petersons are, Jim should probably leave right now to go build terraces, right? Dozer's over in the field. Waiting for him. This farm was farmed without terraces for a lot of years and probably not even on contour, just up and down the hill where it was easiest to farm. And so we get runoff from the field to the south here, we get runoff from our farm, we get runoff from the west, and you can see it in our ravine down there. It's deep. It is. It's part of the reason we don't have a perimeter fence, because it would be a chore to fence it. So, but there, yeah, they're not. The pigs might go down in the ravine, but they're not coming out. So, yeah. We have them fenced out of it. Yeah, with just a couple wires that goes through. So that's the basics of the cattle. We, like I said, we rotationally. Yeah, you wanted to say something about it? Yeah, we've worked really hard to get these genetics that we have. We learned the hard way that you can't just go buy dextras from person selling dextras and have them work. We've learned a lot about having right grass-fed genetics for finishing, right grass-fed genetics for an animal that a cow that can sustain herself well calving and only eating hay. We've learned a lot about having high-quality hay. That's part of the reason that I started working for the Petersons was because I wasn't getting very good hay, and so I traded labor for hay when I worked for them, and I all of a sudden I noticed a massive increase in the gain and the health of our animals in the winter. So that's a big deal. But part of it is just, man, you got to have animals that are conditioned to it. That's why we have as many dextras as we have right now, because it's hard for me to sell these. Because we put 8 years into we've lost animals, we've had to sell animals that didn't fit. It's hard to want to get rid of all that work. So they are for sale, but we're gonna get it down to a manageable number, not labor manageable, but just efficiency manageable. Yeah.
So what is your calving season, and then how do you wean?
So I had a calf today.
If they're 2 years old,
you're
really gotta wean the one off before that
comes.
Yep. So how do you do that?
The cows do a pretty good job of weaning them, obviously.
Oh, okay.
Before they calve. We have calves all year long. Okay. Which again, it was like the sheep. We lamb in January because that's we didn't take the ram out, we didn't take the buck out. We calve in August because we didn't take the bull out. So October. But it works out for us because then we have, I still pretty much finish all my stuff on grass, but we have something ready from the first month, a month after grass starts growing until grass stops growing in the fall. So it works for our marketing. So I haven't changed anything up on it. It's bad management. I mean, it's not good. It's not efficient. It's not good. But it works for, if we had any more than we did, it'd be horrible. But with the numbers that we have, it works. So we do now, we do just some experimenting. We do a little suitcase farming at my uncle's up in Ames. And so we plan that. We're transitioning it to organic to kind of fiddle with some organic grow crops up there. And so that's where our hay is going to come from this year, 25 acres. That's more than enough hay for us. In the past, we bought hay from the Petersons. I like buying from them because they grow good hay, good quality hay. That's important. Now they grow alfalfa clover. How many acres of organic crops do you have, Jim? How many organic acres do you have?
This year we have about 400 acres of row crop.
400 acres of row crop, and then a couple hundred acres of hay and oats?
And 100 acres of oats.
Yeah. So they always have enough, I guess is what I'm getting at, of good quality hay because it's part of their rotation. A lot of people will grow their hay on their worst, down here they grow their hay on their worst ground that they can't row crop, and then they just leave it there for 5 and 6 and 7 years. Yep, you know, it's there for 2 or 3 years, most. So it's always a good hay. So that's where when we started getting good hay, that's where we got it from for sure. I want to walk over here real quick because I know we're running short on time. Talk about the rabbits really quick. So we raise a breed of rabbits. This is Caleb's deal. He's the one filming. He raises a breed of rabbits called Champagne d'Argent. They're a French breed. They're a heritage breed. We raise them on these pasture pens. Each doe has their own pen. And when they kindle, when they have a litter of rabbits, they stay in that pen. When we wean the rabbits, we put the rabbits in another pen, and the doe stays in her own pen. In the winter, they go up into a shed, and they live in a shed. The pens with the green and the white lids are our best design so far. That's a group of rabbits that are kind of roaster size. We just haven't taken them to the processor yet. I'll say this about rabbits. Caleb read You Can Farm by Joel Salatin when he was 8. In that book, Joel talks about his son starting to raise rabbits when he was 8 and how he turned that into his business and made money on the farm. About a year and a half ago, I listened to Joel Salatin on a podcast, and they brought up the rabbits, and he said, yeah, the rabbits were really good for Daniel. The thing about the rabbits was it took us about, 2 to 4 years, 5 years, because they would just die all the time, and they wouldn't grow, and we couldn't get them bred. And the book said nothing about that. The book was like, rabbits are a great way for an 8-year-old kid to get involved and make money on the farm. And it was hard. Domesticated rabbits are not used to living out on grass. The males go sterile when it gets hot. It's hot in Iowa, so you have a hard time breeding in the summer. Commercial rabbitries are in climate-controlled barns. That's why they can breed all year round and have rabbits every month, because they're doing that. Rabbits, when they get hot, if they're not of good outdoor genetics, will get hot and they'll just decide, you know what? It's so hot that I'm not even going to hop over to the water and get a drink. I don't care if I'm a foot away. I'm just going to lay here and die. And they'll do that. If a dog comes by the cage and barks, they'll jump up and break their back or have a heart attack if they're not used to it. It is a hard thing. And so it was a lot of trial and error. We've got it. We're getting it down now. We have 50 or 60 bunnies so far this year. And we're doing well with it. They're tasty. I would not... If I didn't have, this would not be a part of my business if Caleb wasn't here. I would not suggest it for any of you unless you want to process rabbits yourself. There is one processor in the state of Iowa that is state inspected. It's Green Valley Products. He's got to be 70 some years old. He's not going to be doing it for a long time. Let's just put it that way. There's nobody else that's going to do it. And there's one place that'll do it if they're white. Our rabbits aren't white because of the fur. I've tried to talk Story City into doing it, but honestly, I pay $1.50 to get my rabbits processed, and Story City would charge way more than that. They would have to. And it's not a criticism. They would just have to. This guy that has his, he's had his building since the late 70s. It's paid for. It's a shed with a processing room in it, and he was grandfathered into all sorts of rules and regulations, and he doesn't have the overhead, and he charged $1.50 in 1982, and he charges $1.50 now. It is Bloomfield. Yep, south of Bloomfield. Practically in Missouri. What's that? It's a good home city meat. And there are rabbits do follow under 1,000 head state exemption. They do fall under a state exemption. I think you can process on farm up to 1,000 and sell them off farm. But we sold a bunch of rabbits to the cheese shop and stuff like that, and you couldn't do that if you processed them on the farm. So
We process our chickens when we have meat chickens. We process them at Valley View Poultry down in Bloomfield as well, the Amish processor down there. And I've tried to talk him, every time I go down there, I try to talk him into processing rabbits. And he told me his wife went to a rabbit processor once and it smelled so bad and was so loud that she would never let him do it. So blame his wife. Darn Freeman. Darn Sarah. So... Yeah, honestly, I would process rabbits myself before I would process chickens any day. Like, if I was going to raise a homestead meat, I wouldn't raise chickens, I would raise rabbits. Because how do you, I mean, like, chicken, if you want the skin on it, you got to pluck it, and you got to skin a rabbit. And like, I mean, if you know what you're doing in a minute, you just slit, rip. So, that takes me longer to do it than that. But that's the way I would do it. And if the processor would close down, maybe that's something that we would look at in the future. Caleb would be old enough. Becca would never volunteer to help me. So that's right. We'd have to do it in days when Mom was off the farm. So we put this fence up around it, to keep the sheep out. The sheep like to go eat the alfalfa pellets. We move them every day. They do get alfalfa pellets. They eat it down. And it grows back really well. This area is where we've had the rabbits on pasture since we got them, and it is the very first place to green up in the spring and has the tallest grass before anything else. Rabbit fertilizer is really, really good. In the winter rabbit trees, Becca's been using the fertilizer for her berries and stuff like that. Whole garden this year, so. We are getting to the point where we have a lot of rabbit fertilizer. That would be, if you were going to raise rabbits and you're going to process it yourself, I would look into selling rabbit compost as part of a business. It's not going to be a huge moneymaker, but you already have it. So, yeah, Sally. Yes, all the above. I think the learning curve, the question was, did the learning curve have to do with genetics? Did it have to do with the system? I think it's all of the above. Most of the rabbits, domesticated rabbits, are raised in cages off the ground and in climate-controlled buildings. Or they're pets, which are raised in a cool garage or in the house or whatever it is. And so we're asking these rabbits to go out, and it's cool. I mean, the basic design that we have is that works best is we have a door we can open at the back, a lid we can take off on the front. We have furring strips on the bottom so that they can't dig out. We use wood instead of metal because if they bite that metal when they're trying to get the grass, it'll kind of make them lose the taste for the grass. They'll taste that metal, and then they'll be like, I don't like that, and so they won't eat the grass. Also, if you were to put this chicken wire or some sort of mesh on the bottom, when you dragged it forward, it would bend it all over. And rabbits like to eat from the top down. So when we drag these forward, the grass pops up between the things. And then on the inside, the very first ones that we built had, we put solid plywood floors in the hutches. And since then, we have taken it all out, and we've put this hardware cloth in the bottom. They can get closer to the ground and cooler in the summer. I mean, when we all are definitely afraid of taking rabbits to fair because it is hot. And not us personally, but this year was a little cooler because it rained for the most of the fair, but the last day of the fair, the last Wednesday of the fair, it was like 90, 96 degrees. And that's just hard on a rabbit that's used to not that. I feel confident in the coolness of a rabbit's being able, they always have shade. All of our cages have shade the whole way. So as the sun moves through the day, they can always be outside in shade or they can get into the hutches. And as you saw when we came up there, a lot of them were in the hutches as well. So we've made a lot of progress on the rabbits, and a lot of it has to do with selection, genetics, things like that. We'll talk about wires in the slides. Yeah, so it's a good learning experience, but it would be a difficult centerpiece for sure. No, dogs in the fence. Cats are predators. Cats can get through this fence. So if rabbits will get out from time to time. Yep. And we've lost some because of heat, but not since we've kind of culled that out of our herd. So they're fun. It's kind of a neat thing. It's nice. It's one of the few things that we can take to the fair where we're kind of on par with everyone else. Like, it's not like there's, it's not a club lamb or a $10,000 show steer or something like that. Yeah. The rabbit shows are kind of boring. You just kind of sit there. It's almost as bad as a poultry show. But, so, any questions about the rabbits? Nope, it's just standard. I wouldn't use the green tree because they do chew on it, as you can tell. Yep. And they're pretty much built that everything can be replaced one piece at a time. The new ones are for sure, yeah. If we had to replace something, because we're going to have to replace the chicken wire eventually and things like that. But we've gotten better at building them. I have a video on YouTube. If you just go to youtube.com/thebeginningfarmer, there's a video where I explain them a little bit more. I'm trying to remember if we have. There's no reason that I wouldn't, I don't think, but I don't think we have. Other than these move a lot slower than the chickens do, so that would be the main reason I wouldn't. Yeah, the chickens will eat an area up faster than the rabbits do, so I would have to move fence a lot more. Kind of a deal. We don't. What we do is we run them down like this, and then we'll make a big move, and we'll use the tractor to kind of drag them up and around, and then back that way. Acre less. We from here to the road is basically the entirety of our rabbit grass. And we've got what 13 cages. We've got 3 cages, 4 cages. We have some repairs to do before we put rabbits in those. And some of these need repairs too. My cows kind of rubbed up against them a little bit this year. This last year, so there are some repairs that need to be made.